We have a flow of presenters, but yes. The president is here. You can just kick it to me.
Okay, good afternoon, and council reconvenes. Do we need to do the roll? Okay, please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
I'm here, and I'll just add it's 10 p.m. on the time that I was on yesterday, so if I nod off, just wait.
Oh, there he is.
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, council, for covering this morning, and welcome back.
Yep. Welcome back to you, too.
Thank you. We have a single item on the council calendar this afternoon. It's item 889. Would you? So two items. 887 and 888. Sorry, let me get synchronized. 887, 888. Would you please read 887?
887, adopt the Powell Division Transit and Development Project Portland Local Action Plan.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and welcome. You're going to start, Joe? Or?
Yes, I will. Good afternoon, Mayor and City Councilors. I'm Joe Zender, Chief Planner for Bureau Planning and Sustainability. And today, Carl, if you could flip us on, we're here to present the Portland Local Action Plan, Community Development and Transportation Improvement Action Plan. That's a piece of the Portland Division High Capacity Transit Project. That project, that bigger overarching transit project, is a partnership with Metro and TriMet, cities of Gresham, cities of Portland, and it's to improve transit in a corridor where there's a lot of transit-dependent households and a large, large amount of transit use. It's to improve access. The places it links are centers of employment and education and services, and the main piece we're talking about today is to support equitable community development. So, the way the presentation's going today is we're going to start with Metro Councilor Bob Stacey to introduce sort of Metro's point of view, and Metro is the overall leader of this phase of the project. Bob is co-chair of the steering committee. After that, I'll be joined by Kirk Krieger and Kate Dean, and we'll present the particulars of the plan. After that, we're ready for Q&A, and there's also some invited testimony.
Right, I have that here. Great. Thank you. Councillor Stacey. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to reassure Commissioner Fish that what I told him before the proceedings began, that Metro and the City of Portland are partners in this project. We're not the leaders or ascended above the City of Portland in some way. I sincerely believe that. The gravamen of my remarks today will be that the Powell Division Project, or the Division Corridor, as we're now focusing on increasingly, is a very important transportation investment. But in terms of the excitement and possibility and importance of the planning effort overall, this would be a much less significant project if it weren't for the significant leadership being shown by the City of Portland in the Portland Action Plan. I want to first acknowledge that in addition to Commissioner Novick and me, there are other members of the steering committee on the corridor project here today. My colleague, Councillor Shirley Craddock, District 1 Metro Councillor, who actually represents significantly more of the project corridor than I do, including 2.5 miles inside the city limits of Portland. This is a long and important corridor for transportation generally, and for transit in particular. In addition, we have two citizen members of the steering committee, Ken Marks, who represents East Portland Neighborhoods in the East Portland Action Plan, and Vivian Satterfield, who I believe is representing Pano and the Jade District and Opal to varying degrees, but she's representing the community, which is the important point. Unlike past transit projects and community building projects in this region, Powell Division is a unique partnership of the regional agencies, TriMet, Metro, ODOT, the cities of Portland and Gresham, and community representatives selected to ensure that the views of neighborhoods, minorities, and community members throughout the corridor would be reflected in the decision-making process that leads to a decision on transit and on the other elements. That partnership has been very pivotal in the development of this corridor, including about 2 years ago, citizen members of the steering committee bringing forward a key issue that was on the radar screen but wasn't incorporated into the work program of Metro, or I'll dare say, to some extent, the City of Portland. The concern about displacement of businesses and low-income households whenever significant public improvements are made in an area, particularly improvements that provide additional access to jobs and other amenities. That's, in many people's minds, an unalloyed good. We're providing more access to people, to jobs, and daily needs. At the same time, if we're making this area more desirable for investment, we have the prospect of pushing out existing businesses and households. It was community members that brought that forward. Metro, thanks to my colleague Sam Chase and the council, has moved in the direction of developing its own strategies about what we call equitable housing. And I believe the City of Portland is among other cities applying for a $500,000 pot of resources to do housing planning in response to some of the new tools that the city has already picked up and started using and that other communities in the region can use, like the construction excise tax, like the inclusionary zoning approach. But those ideas started with the citizen members who said, we need strategies. And the City of Portland stepped forward in the form of Joe, who started convening people, and the Bureau, and PBOT, and PDC, and housing, to put together strategies that make sense for this corridor and that are outlined in the Portland Action Plan. So, yes, the Division Corridor will be a transportation lifeline that will connect this whole southeast area much better with more frequent service, with better buses that are longer but not wider on interdivision, just the same width, that will be able to move more people on each trip, that will reduce the number of passed-by passengers in close interdivision and make the speed of the movement through the entire corridor better for East Portland and Gresham residents. It'll deal with the capacity issues and the need for more transit service in that area. But fundamentally, it's making real progress in areas that the city and the region need to progress toward ensuring that there are places where people can live as areas become more prosperous, that the supply of affordable housing and the opportunities to stay in a community rather than be displaced from it are increased as we make strategic public investments. So my hat is off to the city. I know you'll continue to be engaged in the planning process and ultimately the implementation of a bus rapid transit line in Southeast Portland, but you'll also be leading the way in terms of making this this project ever more valuable to the region as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Councillor Stacey or for Joe? Right. Thank you both. We're going to hear from I think Councillor Craddock and from the Housing Bureau, and then also from our steering committee members who are here.
Right. Correct? So the next phase of this, I'll have, unless Councillor Craddock wants to address you all, it will be Kirk Krieger and Kate Dean will join me, and we'll go through the particulars of the plan.
Okay.
Let's do that. Thank you.
Councillor Craddock has the prerogative whenever she wants to jump up and say, wait a minute. You forgot this.
So The part of the plan that we're focusing on today is the part related to housing development, affordable housing development, and economic development, community economic development. And the overview of the pieces of the plan or the actions that are included in the plan is shown on this side, on the housing side of the strategy. The overall point is to get more and to get better affordable housing in the corridor. And as Councillor Stacey pointed out, when we did the displacement or gentrification risk analysis a few years ago as part of the comprehensive plan, the south side of Powell and all of Division popped out as a high-risk area given the characteristic, the income and the renters and the other characteristics of the households there. So even before there was a high-capacity transit project, we knew that this was a part of the city where we needed to pay attention to that issue. So in vis-a-vis of housing, we've got three overall actions. One is to increase the supply, and just for context too, we wrote this, we were asked to write the local action plan as if a five-year plan. So this is looking out the things that we think we can get accomplished by 2022. Add 300 affordable units in the corridor. The 300 number is not necessarily reflective of the overall need of affordable housing in the city or in this corridor. However, part of what we needed to do is to make this in proportion to the size of the transit project and the sense that we have of what the impact would be. We thought that was a more reasonable way to sort of set this particular goal. Other goals are set citywide that you've already heard in the comprehensive plan and other work that housing's brought forward. So the goal is 300 units. Coupled with that, we have a project that we're going to get underway at BPS about creating better multi-dwelling standards. So you know the apartment buildings, especially that you see out east on, out in East Portland on some of the lots, and their design need to be improved to benefit the households who live in those units more, and we're moving to evaluate and improve those standards. So overall, we hope that the multi-dwelling, the apartment buildings out in East Portland and elsewhere in the city will be better designed and will carry over into the affordable housing units as well, market rate and affordable. Finally, on the housing part of the strategy, and this came clearly through the messages given us by the steering committee and the advocacy groups in East Portland, was that there was a need for stronger tenant protections. Having good units, having more units is one thing, but protecting the rights of those in those units is another. And so the point of this action is just to really continue the work that the Housing Bureau and others have already started in that regard. On the economic development side, the overall message or the point of this piece of the strategy is we want to make sure that the businesses and the households that are currently in this corridor are able to take advantage of the benefits that come from introducing better transit. We know that the households are going to benefit from the transit because it will perform better, and they already are heavy transit users. If there's displacement of either the business, as there is displacement of the businesses and or residents, that benefit to those folks becomes more threatened. So on the economic development side, we really focused on business retention and getting businesses in the position to take advantage of growth, and also workforce opportunities for households and residents in the corridor. The tools that you see listed here, business retention, connect or workforce navigation, sort of development assistance is what help development means, is classic sort of real estate work. Having this be a community-driven planning and action effort are really tools from the PDC's approach that they've been using in the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative areas, the NPI areas. So part of this is bringing it to scale, using that toolkit that we have been developing, or the PDC has been developing with the community, and trying to bring it to scale to affect businesses outside the NPIs in the corridor. So that's the overall actions. Funding is the next piece of this to see it through. So we've estimated the amount of money it takes for the 300 units and the other pieces of action and to increase the access or the ability to deliver those business services and workforce services in the corridor. And the estimates came out to be $33 million for the housing piece, $6 million for the economic development activities. The housing work is primarily implemented by Housing Bureau. The economic development work is implemented by PDC and their community partners.
Do we have the agreements of the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative that they're going to dedicate $1 million of their money?
Well, Kate's here to address that part of the overall, what this really represents. So we wanted to show also, with the adoption of this plan, what resources do we have to get together to get going? On the housing side, and Kurt will address this in more detail, when we prepared the plan, we thought we had about that amount of money. This is $7 million that we would have access, and $0.5 million we'd have access to. There's still a $26 million gap to get to the finish line, and Kurt can address our ideas about getting to that. On the And you'll notice that in here is some money from Central East Side that's already sort of dedicated to housing, so we're counting that as part of this. Housing Bureau money that they can reprogram or that are, could be focused over there in current sort of programs. And then Metro in their community planning and development grant is actually helping with this effort, and we're taking that money, and it's not so much planning this time as we're actually trying to go out and do these actions, get started. On the economic development side, there's the TIF money that's in the MPIs that Kate can talk about, the activities that are only can be spent within the MPI geography, but it's similar activities. Once again, there's some Metro money from a community planning and development grant, and there's some general fund that is allocated to PDC for this kind of work. Still to be funded on the economic development side is $4.3 million. So if we're going to follow through, we needed to, the next sort of parts of the presentation show how we get from the start funding that we have to be able to deliver the actions. And so to talk about this and to talk about, you know, more fully what opportunities that we see in the corridor, I'd like to turn it over first to Kurt and then to Kate.
Very good. Mr. Mayor, members of council, it gives me great pleasure to come to you today and not ask for new resources. In taking stock of this plan, I think it's worth mentioning that Matthew Scheibold and Carl Dinkelspiel from the Housing Bureau were part of the initial conceptualization of the fiscal note and the number. And between the time that number was developed and the time that we've come to you, frankly, we've been able to put a lot of tools in place. The securitization of the transit lodging tax into some general fund-backed bonds gives us resources outside of urban renewal areas to make purchase offers on property. We are actively pursuing sites in this corridor and have made some issued letters of intent to acquire some properties. We're not prepared yet to disclose what they are, but they are in this particular study area. Moreover, with the action you've taken to implement a construction excise tax August 1st, we'll start to accumulate not just the offset funding for developers to comply with inclusionary zoning, but additional resources that can be used in this particular area. As mentioned, we have existing tax increment within the construct of the urban renewal areas, and you appropriated some $500,000 for our rental rehab program. That's really an initial start on a robust rental rehab program. If you recall, the request was for $1.5 million. Assuming we're able to launch that program, we'll come back in the normal budget process for a full funding. And that was consistent with the East Portland Action Program's goals. So I'm thinking, frankly, that we have the tools at our disposal for us to fill this gap in the next 5 years. The real estate is always opportunity-driven, and we need to focus our resources and our attention on this area to make sure that we avail ourselves of those opportunities. But I wanted to let you know that I think we have the tools necessary to meet this goal.
So you won't be coming back to ask for additional resources?
I don't expect to. The council, of course, will have to approve any acquisition of real estate in due time, and we'll come in each instance for that. The resources that we would normally have available at our disposal in the next 5 years should allow us to fulfill this goal.
So could you because the chart we just saw mm-hmm. said that there was nearly $27 million of unmet need that is not specified. How come we don't have that broken down into where you think that money's going to come from?
Well, you know, our annual budget is $153 million as approved by council. And, of course, we're a citywide bureau serving lots of different areas. This area is a large geographic area. And as we calibrate our resources, we obviously are working within the 8 open urban renewal areas. This corridor includes 2 of those 8, Lentz and Gateway, which is helpful. But moreover, it is large enough that we think we can find opportunities within this area in the next 5 years to place 300 affordable housing units in the area. We don't budget specifically by allocating resources because it is so driven by opportunities. What I can tell you is that we are really at the present time only shopping for real estate in the interstate urban renewal area and in this corridor. If the Tigard City Council votes affirmatively to support the Southwest Corridor, I think we'll redouble our efforts in the Southwest Corridor as well.
I would still like to see more of a framework for which buckets you are looking to get that nearly $27 million from.
I think it's a planning tool. I'm perfectly supportive of that. What we can't do is budget in that manner because we obviously don't want to leave money on the table. We need to deploy our resources in a timely manner and make sure that we meet our goals. But I don't have a problem with giving you a roadmap as to how we would deploy those resources.
Yeah, I'd like a framework for you think that, and of course not project by project,
right.
But how much of the construction excise tax do you think will be dedicated to this area?
Mm-hmm.
How much of the other resources that you mentioned will be, you know, what are the buckets and mm-hmm. where are they coming from? Thank you.
Be happy to.
Kurt, let me follow up on that if I could. Is your goal to have 300 new units of affordable housing, or is preservation part of your strategy?
This plan calls for 300 new units. We plan on, in addition, stabilizing the current stock to the greatest extent possible.
And when you talk about 300 affordable units, if you were successful tomorrow in achieving that goal, what would be the income distributions?
Well, I think it's going to be 100% below 60% of AMI. 100% would be low income. I must say that there are a lot of mobile home parks in this area, and those tend to be even lower income than that. We are looking at preservation that includes mobile home parks as well as existing apartment complexes.
We've mentioned this before, but I hope soon we identify a mobile home park that the city can take its entire toolkit to bear, because one of the things I'd like to see is BES, VPS, housing, all of our key partners at the table taking a mobile home park, reimagining it with updated units, and then greening it up so that we can show what a different kind of environment we can create in a mobile home context while preserving affordability. And let me just ask you a tougher question. So you're committing $500,000 over $500,000 over 5 years from your federal funds. So that's new money that you're carving out of the money we get from the feds. But you're crediting $5 million from an urban renewal district. Why isn't that old wine in a new bottle?
Well, I think actually the $500,000, as I understand this chart, in terms of sources, is actually the rental rehab general fund commitment. It's not federal dollars.
Okay.
I believe it's general fund dollars.
The chart that we have at page 28 says PHB federal fund allocation over 5 years, $500,000.
Okay. Well, let me double check on that. It's
going off the chart. So if it isn't that fund, that's fine. I just
yeah. And it's as Kurt said, it's a deployment of a source of funds that Housing Bureau has to focus on this quarter. So let me double check the source.
But since we already have money budgeted in urban renewal districts and we have a strategy, why isn't this old wine in a new bottle if we're crediting TIF within Central East Side?
Well, it may be a difference without a distinction. I'm not sure I'm fully tracking you, but indeed.
Well, I'm being provocative, obviously,
right.
But the money in the urban renewal district predated a strategy for this corridor. And we've been thinking about how to spend that money. Now you've got a vision for a corridor, and you're talking about new investment to address the housing needs. So, I mean, you're adding this to the mix, but this is a pre-existing commitment we made to do housing within that urban renewal district. So someone might argue, well, that five is already in the mix, come up with an additional five. Why are you suggesting that we essentially credit an existing allocation within an urban renewal district of TIF that was otherwise targeted to creating this housing before we had this strategy?
But the way that we came up with the goal and sort of were thinking of this is sort of an end state, what can be on the ground with the completion of the high-capacity transit project. So this is part of that mix of units, granted that there is a set-aside. It's coming from an urban renewal area that already exists, but that money could be spent on the corridor. The Central East Side is a big area. It could be spent outside the corridor in the Central East Side. The site that we've been talking about is particularly is a site that will be where the bus rapid transit intersects, or at least comes in the vicinity of the light rail, so it's a major sort of transfer point, so we think it's a opportune site for affordable housing.
So you're targeting it. So that just then my final question is, does that displace any other affordable housing commitments or priorities that the district had previously put on the table that we're now shifting to this focus?
It does not.
Any other questions? Other points you wanted to cover, Kurt?
Very good.
Thank you. Kate, welcome.
Great. Thanks. Kate Dean, Portland Development Commission. I'm the Community Economic Development Manager. I'm here today to talk a little bit about the economic development portions of the action plan. The slide that you see before you, as we really looked at the transit project coming through, what we've tried to do in the economic development portion of this plan is to really anchor our economic development actions around the existing NPI areas in the Division Corridor. And the focus of the plan is really between 82nd Avenue and approximately 174th, where the City of Portland meets Gresham in this corridor. So the idea would be, you're well aware, I think, of the investments that City Council currently makes in the Jade District and in the Division Midway. So through City Council investments of general fund on an annual basis, we're able to fund those two districts, including one staff person in each of those districts to manage the district, to know all the businesses, to work with the community to identify needs and really to drive local economic development. So our vision here is that we have this infrastructure that the city already has made, and that if we and in addition to that, other existing resources that we are putting in place right now include business technical assistance. So again, the city works with PDC to fund business technical assistance focused on primarily on low income and or minority owned businesses. We have worked to layer those resources within our NPIs to a great extent. We have, in both of these districts, we have on the ground business advising that on a walk-in basis that's more, I would say, light touch. And then for those businesses that need more than a light touch on business technical assistance, like, I need some help with marketing, or can you look at my website, or how do I, you know, where do I go to get this from the city? We have ongoing business technical assistance that we also provide that people can receive up to 3 years of business technical assistance. So we're trying to layer our existing programs within the NPI areas. So what the plan does, and what we've started even this fiscal year with a grant from Metro, we've got a grant from Metro. The way that we're using that grant in large part is to enhance our business technical assistance in the corridor. So we're serving the entire corridor, not just NPIs, although it will sort of be focused through the NPIs. We'll be kind of home bases. So we're going to double down on our business technical assistance. That means that more people can receive longer-term business technical assistance than we have with the base city funding. We are also helping to fund a community organizer. So one of the things that occurs when you have a major project that comes through an area is that there's a lot of public outreach that's needed. And up to this point, a lot of the burden or blessing of that public involvement has really fallen on the NPIs. And so one of the things we're doing with the Metro grant and that we think we need to sustain over time is to have a community organizer so that that much of the outreach and community connection to the transit project and to business technical assistance and to some of the workforce development services that we hope to put in this corridor can really be, we can have a community organizer who's out on the front line developing relationships and making connections with individual residents and businesses and making sure that they get to the appropriate, business technical advisors, workforce advisors, and learning about what's happening with the transit project, when meetings are coming up, when significant community input is needed, hosting meetings.
Where would that organizer be housed?
We anticipate that we will house them through the NPIs. Though we have one right now. We're kind of knitting together resources that we are putting first in Division Midway because they have slightly less capacity than Jade does with the broader resources of Epano at this point. But I think we would see this as a resource for the corridor and something that would be shared between the two as we move beyond.
Would there be any merit, do you think, to house that position at Venture Portland?
I mean, it's certainly something we could consider. I think the reason that we are suggesting that we would put this in the community-based organizations is that they're just frankly closer to the people and that this really is, it's a more of a community development role. It's not specifically about businesses. It's as much about connecting residents and businesses to the transit project as it goes along, connecting businesses to business technical assistance and back to the districts and to the business associations in the corridor, and finally connecting residents up to some of the workforce development services that are there. So it's certainly something that we could consider. I think our proposal and recommendation would be that we funnel it through the NPIs. The transit project has really developed a very nice relationship with the two NPIs in terms of the outreach and the community connections.
Is the other virtue of I don't remember the numbers on the chart, but is another virtue of running it through an NPI that you can use TIF?
No.
Are we talking general fund?
We're talking general fund at this point.
But where is that coming from?
Which?
The additional money for the community organizer.
Well, right now, where the money is coming from, I mentioned that we have a Metro grant.
Right.
So a large part of that is coming from that. And then PDC gives some resources to the district in terms of E-Zone funding for technical assistance. And we had a little bit of carryover of that. And so we're sort of, this year, we're knitting this particular position together to kind of jumpstart that work in the corridor.
Well, I appreciate the thriftiness. On the other hand, we just did a six-month-long budget process, and I don't remember hearing allocating funding for this from the general fund.
It is from the Metro grant and then from PDC's E-Zone dollars. And we did, in the budget process, bring forward a package that wasn't, you weren't able to fund around the BRT action plan. So I acknowledge that, yes, you didn't appropriate anything for it. We're using other resources and kind of trying to cobble together a need that we see there right now.
Right, thank you. And just following on from Commissioner Frisch's question, how does Southeast Uplift and the East Portland Neighborhood Organization and EPAP, the East Portland Action Plan, how do they fit in with the community organizing around transportation?
I think that this will be a resource for all of those. It will be a resource that helps all of those organizations who are also, there's just an unmet need out there for community organizing that occurs with a big project, and it typically falls on the backs of local community-based organizations to do that kind of on the fly. And so I do think that it benefits those other organizations. In addition to that, our NPIs are very tied into EPAP, particularly to the Economic Development Committee. So I think that there's synergy there.
I see that Laurie Boysen from the Division Midway is here, so I can follow up with some questions to her.
Sure.
I'd like to ask you again, though, my question about the funding from the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiatives for this plan, have both of them agreed that they're going to dedicate $100,000 of their money.
The TIF dollars, that's really, first of all, those dollars are not ours to spend. They're the NPI's to spend. So it's really the figure that you see here, which is about $100,000 per district, is money that they would direct. And so we're just making an estimate of where those dollars would likely go in terms of investments around businesses and business improvements.
But my question is, have they agreed that they're going to dedicate $100,000 per year for 5 years?
I am not sure whether they have agreed to specifically dedicate that. That resource is theirs to spend, and it's, like I said, it's just an estimate of what they might be spending to help this effort.
And part of how we were thinking about it is that both of the NPIs in the corridor are directly on what the high capacity, the proposed alignment of the bus rapid transit line. So the work of the NPIs really is about those districts and directed by those districts, but is inherently shares the mission that we're trying to do with the economic development work in the local action plan. And what the extra funds are is to bring it to, is to be able to spread it to businesses outside of the NPIs. It's not so much that we're redirecting any NPI dollars. We're just saying that there's money in the NPIs, and the essence of the NPI-directed work is complementary to what we're trying to do in the action plan.
Well, I'm going to be looking forward to community testimony. Thank you.
So that's basically the existing money that I just ran through. And so I mentioned that with the plan that we would anticipate adding additional business technical assistance. Right now, again, that's something that we're funding with our Metro grant this year. But we would also be adding, making a request to City Council in order to fund activities such as small business lending and access to capital, a position around connecting the community to anchor institutions, both to the jobs there and businesses to economic opportunities within anchor institutions, those being education such as Portland Community College, some of the hospitals in the area, and really taking more of a citywide approach for that. And then this year, and then finally workforce navigation, this year we have a partnership with Work Systems, Inc., where we have, again, tried to be proactive, trying to knit together some partnerships in this case in order to test out a workforce navigator in the corridor to try to connect people who are under or unemployed to both workforce training, jobs, and workforce development activities such as resume building, interviewing, other things. So on the second slide that you see here, I have tried my best. We have tried our best to just give you on an annual basis a little bit of a glimpse of what this looks like. So we'd been talking earlier about, if you look at the center green box with the arrow, we're estimating how much of the general fund resources that we get from the city go to the two NPIs and to business technical assistant currently. We would be coming back for that annual request. That's a part of our ongoing budget with the city. We've just acknowledged in the other green bucket that there is an ongoing TIF available for activities that could complement our work in the corridor. And all of this business technical assistance would be done through partners such as, we have a whole suite of business technical assistance nonprofit partners, and it is likely that we continue to be through them. And then finally, you're looking at what new general fund dollars that we would need. So the Metro grant is really a one-time grant, and our partnership with FDSI is also a one-year opportunity at this point. So we would anticipate with that general fund request continuing the enhanced business technical assistance that's currently funded through the Metro grant, continuing the workforce navigation services that is currently being funded with a partnership opportunity with WSI, And then finally, really institutionalizing that community organizer function in the corridor, and then adding two new functions, access to capital, so a big barrier for business can be access to capital, and the anchor institution function. And so I think this slide fairly well lays out what on an annual basis that that new request would be coming to City Council.
So one of the things I really appreciated with the transportation budget that Commissioner Novick put forward in our last round was that there was a constrained list and there was a non-constrained list in the Portland plan and transportation funding. Do we have another version of this plan? That 580,000 is a very big number, and when I don't know that we're going to have lots of calls on the budget next year. Yeah. So what happens with this plan if we're not able to fund that?
Well, I think those conversations are, it's certainly something that we could respond to. I think at this point that I would want to go back and talk to the districts, our public partners, and more importantly, some of the community partners about what are the priorities. When we developed this plan, our philosophy, quite frankly, was if we have a major transit project coming to the to this corridor, and we know that there are inevitably pressures caused by that are likely to displace businesses and residents, what is it, where's the kitchen sink that we can throw at this in order to try to put tools in place to minimize those displacement impacts? So we can certainly ratchet this back. I would like to do so in consultation with some of our partners.
And if I could just add, the basic way to think about it is, with less funds over the next 5 years, you reduce the area, the geography in which we can work to get to businesses, to assist them, and the number of businesses. This overall budget and this size of effort was scaled once again to the size of this transit project, which is big, but it's not as big as some of the other transit projects that you've considered. And we just scale it back. That's what happens.
What's the status of the overall project as far as TriMet doing any kind of a transportation system on Division?
Well, Commissioner, if I could just wrap this up and we'll get TriMet up here in Metro can answer those questions.
Thank you. Just one final question, though. What discussions were had as far as the community organizer as to where that would be located and how it might partner with neighborhood coalitions? Because it seems like you're going to be hiring somebody and hoping that they've got an ongoing job rather than a one-time funding job.
I believe that we did have conversations with the NPIs. I don't think we did have conversations with some of the other community-based organizations about that.
Yep. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Questions, other comments for these folks? And do you want me to call up the four? Or did you, sorry, Commissioner?
I just want to make sure I understand the context for this. Joe, what's the analogy here in terms of the exercise we're going through? The best analogy?
The best analogy.
Head of a major transportation project, anticipating some of the unintended consequences or some of the.
So if I could describe it,
we normally take these up after. The horse has left the barn. So I'm trying to think, what's the equivalent?
Well, this is us trying to get ahead of actually the final alignment and decisions about the project. Part of what you're seeing, and I think it's best reflected in the work that the Housing Bureau has done early on, even in the planning of this, we were generating information that the Housing Bureau has been able to use to start to look for or set some of those early targets for retention, or purchase, and as funds became available or they could reprogram them, they've been able to do that. The practice around transit-oriented development and the way you think about it, we're trying to think about it nationally, I think, is to get ahead of the projects and to bring an equity focus to that work, not just a real estate focus. And in this case, because of the characteristics of the corridor, and the work we're already doing out there, this was an obvious place to try to do that. I don't know if that's responsive.
That's very responsive. And so the Steve, the total cost of this project when we do the transportation enhancements, you would estimate as a low to a high of what?
I think we're going to defer to TriMet on that in fear of getting it somewhat wrong.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear that number, because another way of looking at this is there's a lot of different ways of looking at where you landed. One is it is scaled to the size of the project. Another one, it is scaled in part to the available resources. One is it's a pilot, and we're going to see whether this is really the right number, or does it in the future projects become the floor, and can we go above it? I mean, there's different ways of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is what's the percentage of the total funding that we're setting aside to anticipate upstream these things, and how do we scope out the cost of these projects in the future? We don't know the answers to any of those questions, just like we don't know what the power of the market's going to be ultimately. But you're trying to get upstream and anticipate some of this, and we're going to learn a few things. And what makes it different for me is that over the last 8 years, we usually have this conversation when it's too late. And so it may be the right mix. It may be too modest. Who knows? But it's certainly scaled to what the available resources are. But you've been very honest. If the resources don't all materialize, it will just be it'll be put on a diet. You'll get proportionally less. And that will be a council choice to the extent you're asking for new resources in the future. Is that fair?
Fair.
I
do think it's important to note this has been largely a community-driven process, and I think it's kind of a new process where basically we've had a conversation with the community, and folks have said, we are not sure we want a new high-capacity transit line unless we have some assurances on what happens with housing and economic development, because we do not want to use a deliberate pun, but a paraphrase, we do not want high-capacity transit to simply be a vehicle for gentrification. So I think actually we'll continue to have that conversation with the community, and it's possible that if we cannot fund this plan, I mean, we have back and forth about, well, if we can only fund X percent of this plan, do people in the community still want this project? So I don't know how much heart there may be with a few hundred thousand here and there, but I think that if we thought that we were in danger of losing the lion's share of this investment, then we might say, actually, we don't think the community wants the project.
Well, just one comment off that. In a lot of the other work we do at this body, we take the mitigation costs out of the overall pot of money. We don't say it's another pot of money. We say we're going to do this project along the river's bank, and we're going to take a portion of the money to deal with the mitigation or whatever. And in some cases, it's prescribed. This is different. You can do this transportation project without being required to spend this money. I wonder if what we're heading towards philosophically is a kind of thinking that says, if you're going to do a $100 million transportation project of this kind, you've got to take $20 million of it and do housing and economic development, other things, because it's all of a whole. And the only reason we don't think that way here, and in other cases we do, is it is legally required that we consider mitigation in other contexts and use the same funding source to address the mitigation.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. I should call up the four community members that we have invited testimony from, Chris, Vivian, Duncan, and Kim.
And then we can bring forward TriMet to answer some of the other questions.
Okay, so why don't you pull up another chair, please, and come up as a panel. Chris Smith, Vivian Satterfield, Duncan Wong, Kim Marks. Appreciate having you here and your work on this project. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Smith, Vice Chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and I am here today carrying the Commission's recommendation regarding this plan. We had our public hearing back in January, and you have a letter from us from several months ago now regarding our recommendation. I would say first that we want to applaud the governance structure for this project, the populating the steering committee with community members and representation of relevant advocacy organizations, not just with elected officials, we think is a very good idea. So we commend Metro and the other project partners who made that decision. While we recommend this plan, we do so, and it was an 8-1 vote by which we recommended this plan, and I'll talk about the minority view in a minute. We do so with some conditions, and the first is very much the discussion that you've just been having, that if you cannot find your way clear to fund this mitigation plan, you should seriously reconsider whether we should do the transit project or not. And, you know, it's a little bit challenging, I know, because we can get federal match for the transit component of this project. The federal government is not offering any match for the community mitigation pieces, so it makes it a little tougher for us to come up with the resources, but our commission felt that it was important that we do the mitigation, we commit to do the mitigation. We would also feel better if the affordable housing component of this mitigation plan was stronger than 300 units. We appreciate the effort to get to 300 units, but we think the real impact is probably somewhat larger. And finally, we think that there are additional strategies you'd probably be adding to the toolkit. I think we heard one of them today, which is land banking in advance of the transit project, because, of course, as soon as the transit project appears to be certain, the public benefit of that transit project will wind up being reflected in the property values, and we'll pay more to get the land for the affordable housing and the other needs that we have. So I was heartened to hear that Kurt was talking about acquiring property now before that value is fully baked in. We think that's an important strategy. We also feel like affordable housing retention in the corridor is an important strategy. And then finally, I'll mention that the dissenting member of our commission basically did so on the basis that we should be doing more and should have started it sooner. Thank you.
Thank you. Kim, who's next? Vivian, whoever likes
to. Hey, good afternoon. Vivian Satterfield with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon. I don't frequently have reason to correct Councillor Stacey, but I'm actually not representing Opano in the J District. That's my colleague here, Duncan, although I am a resident of the area, and our offices has recently located to the intersection of 82nd and Franklin, so we're right in the neighborhood. But we do work at the intersection of housing and transportation, so that's why this project is so important, and that's why we've been participating on the steering committee for a number of years now. And that's also caused us to develop this community stabilization goal and toolkit, which we released to the steering committee in March of 2015, alongside some of the community members represented here, Duncan, Heidi Ginnon, who's no longer with Upstream Public Health, of course, Opal, the defunct now Coalition for a Livable Future, Division Midway Alliance, East Portland Neighborhood Office. So there's a number of organizations that have been really involved in digging into some of the tough questions that the council has been asking here around community stabilization and, of course, affordable housing production and preservation. So I think that, you know, overall the action plan, I do want to commend the staff that have been working on it for lifting up a lot of what we put in this toolkit, both from the legal tools that we have available to us and other some ideas that we haven't tried innovating yet. I do like the idea of land banking. I think that's a really critical tool. And, of course, our membership of Bus Riders Unite is going to be digging in more on the transportation aspect of this. And I've been hearing from members that we have some we have a lot of questions and some concerns around the transportation angle. But as this action plan stands now, I'm speaking mostly to the development side and economic development aspects of that. So I think that what I've been hearing from the line of questioning here from this council is right on. These are critical questions, you know, to address. How are we going to develop an analysis around the dollars being spent for transportation? How are we blending them with housing and economic development? And quite frankly, we need some leadership to figure out some of these tough questions. We have a lot of tools available to us now that we haven't had before, but what does that look like citywide? What does that look like in our specific target area? And, you know, we need this plan regardless of the transit investment. Looking at the patterns of gentrification and displacement, this plan is needed regardless. Thank you.
Be next.
Okay. Good afternoon. Duncan Huang with Opano and the J District. Thanks for having us in for testimony. So after extensive community engagement with our folks, many of which was in language, we spoke with residents, business owners, and landowners. Generally speaking, our community is supportive of the BRT project, but we have three major concerns. The first, obviously, that we've discussed is the displacement of our business and neighbors. Our businesses are also concerned about what happens to our local business community during construction and, you know, how that would disrupt the business district and what would happen to their customers. And finally, we had a lot of concern over potential loss of property and land to the project. In a previous scheme, we were losing between 10 and 27 businesses within the district, which would have been incredibly disruptive and really not palatable to the community. So to kind of illustrate where we are with this project, I just want to highlight the corner of 82nd and Division, because it really kind of illustrates the issues that we're facing and how it intersects with this project. So on the northeast corner, you have Hong Farlow, which no longer exists. It was a Portland institution. It was here in Portland for 87 years and has now closed. The new owners, in talking to them, are really excited about the transit project. You kind of see the dollar signs flashing in their eyes. You know, so we're seeing some sort of property speculation already. Across the street on the southeast corner, we have Canton Grill. If you drive by today, they have a sign on their marquee that says 72 years in operation, third generation business owners. So Cindy, the current business owner, you know, she's a third generation owner of that business. And, you know, there's some great video footage of her being really emotional about this project. She really wants to stay in this neighborhood. And, you know, when her property was potentially up for acquisition to do the turn lanes, you know, she was really upset and emotional about that. I don't think that's on the table anymore, but it kind of speaks to the sentiment of our business owners. They really want to stay here. And, you know, they've been here for some of them 72 years. So it's really important for them to stay. Across the street on the northwest corner, you have a new PCC Southeast campus, now serving 11,000 students. Now also a community anchor. You know, they're really excited about the project because it brings more access to opportunity for PCC students. And finally, across the street, on the southwest corner, we have JAMS, for Jade Apano Multicultural Space, a TOD project and a future site for affordable housing. We're intending to have 48 units of affordable housing there, which would be a great win for the community. So that's kind of like a microcosm of the impact of this project on our neighbors and residents. And, you know, kind of going from that earlier this year in January with the Sustainability Commission, our board voted to support the BRT project contingent on the funding for the mitigation strategies that were being proposed. You know, there's a whole suite of priorities there that are all great, but for us, really four rise to the top. The first is more affordable housing. 300 units is a great start. I think that was the amount called for already in the comp plan, so the city should go above and beyond that where possible. We're really interested in having a business mitigation fund and more technical assistance for our small businesses, particularly during construction. We're concerned about any loss of transit. If we lose underlying service, you know, how is that going to affect our transit-dependent residents and how they get to their jobs and school? And finally, we're really excited about the possibility of land banking and getting ahead of the issues that are coming. So I guess overall, you know, we're really excited about everything in the Portland Action Plan, and we want to be a BRT project that makes the lives of residents and riders and neighbors along the alignment better. So for this reason, you know, we think the Portland Action Plan should be adopted. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Marks, you get to back cleanup for this group.
Oh, thank you. My name's Kim Marks, and I'm the representative for the East Portland Action Plan on the steering committee. I want to first thank the staff of all the different agencies for putting in the work that they have put in to come up with the plan. Having said that, I have to admit that, frankly, I'm somewhat ambivalent about the plan. As Duncan just mentioned, the 300 units that are currently in the plan were already on deck, and the only benefit that I see that the plan provides is that those units are directly being linked to the corridor where they otherwise would not necessarily be. I don't think that the approach that was used to determine those number of units is appropriate given the nature of the populations that live along Powell and Division. Doesn't take a genius to realize that there are a lot more people of low income and moderate income that live along that particular corridor than in other parts of the city. And to only allocate proportional to the entire city for a 10-mile corridor seems to be less than impressive, to say the least. I think that there certainly needs to be more housing. As for the economic development aspect of it, I think that, there's significant oomph there, or lack, for lack of a better word, and Lori Boyson will be speaking to that in more detail.